Okay, I hope everybody can hear me. Let me know if there's any problem. This is our 87th program for the Science of Triangles. And there's not so much more to go when we are continuing within the book Esoteric Astrology, but there's all kinds of references that we can work upon, and all kinds of triangles that we can think about as we go forward with this. I'd like to also undertake let's maybe call it the science of the crosses. I think that's a very interesting subject. It's not triangles per se. Rather, what you get is kind of a pyramidal structure, eventually with one point in the center. But we'll cross that when we get to it. I'd like to welcome you. And let's see, we have, I'm waiting on someone here. I don't know whom, but they'll be showing up. But welcome, meanwhile, Anne and Annette and Antoinette and Astra, Barbara, Brennan, Catherine, Georgina, Isabel, and Ishtar, Joan and Johi, Karen, Carrie, Margot, Mariana, let's see, and Marina, and Mariot, Martine, Miro, and it says here, N. Burr, welcome. Natney, Nicole, Nienka, Pablo, Sandra, Walter, Winnie, and Yvonne, and Zenaide. Excuse me, and over here on the right-hand side, Michael and Joe are helping keep all this straight in terms of the technical side of things. So if there's any problem, you just communicate with them. And in the beginning of all of these programs, we've been using Great Invocation Number 2. We might think, okay, the election in America is over. And indeed, it is, I think, to all reasonable people, over. But there are still attempts being made, actually, to steal the election. You probably know about this, but the certification of the ballots is the next important move. And there has been now an attempt in Michigan. It was rescinded, fortunately. There was so much outrage and so much complaint. But the idea was certify only the suburbs where the white people are. Do not certify Detroit, where the people of color are. So they attempted to do that, and they said that's what they were going to do. They were not going to certify Detroit, which would have been a theft of the entire state of Michigan, which was important in creating the so-called blue wall, where Vice President-elect Biden had reestablished a strength that the Democratic Party could always rely upon. Anyway, that danger at the last minute was overcome, and maybe we don't have the full story, but apparently there were so many outraged complaints about the intention to do that on a technicality, something that had appeared many, many times in the past and never led to the lack of certification, that it was an obvious matter of political manipulation. So therefore, what is my point? My point is that we continue to be vigilant in these matters, and perhaps it's going to be a rough ride, friends. as we might expect, the great conclave coming up will be resisted in all ways possible by the counter force and those who unknowingly, unwittingly, or even wittingly carry forth their projects, the project of the forces of obstruction. This, of course, we have to counter. You know, we're not a lot of people, but we have some esoteric techniques, and we can meditate, and we can visualize, and we can work together, and we have powerful mantras and invocations that we can use. We must resist this assault on the will of the individual, the will of the people. It is an assault, and you know, there's no patriotism in it all, in any of it. What we have right now is a COVID crisis in America, really out of control, and increasingly so as well in other countries. Europe is suffering, and before long, it will be again another huge wave that during the flu season will, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, will be responsible for many, many more deaths. Are these the subjects of discussion in the United States? Certainly not by the part that represents selfishness and materialism. No, it is not discussed. Merely the egocentric hope that the individual least fitting for the presidential task in probably the whole of presidential history will be retained for a second term. That is the discussion, and by all means are being used to try to fair and foul, and mostly foul, are being used to establish this ongoing identity, this retention of his identity as the President of the United States. I would say it probably will not succeed, but vigilance is always required. And as part of that vigilance, we sound now great invocation number two. Let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end. Okay, thank you, everyone. We have a tight schedule tonight because immediately following this webinar is our daily vigil, USA Vigil webinar. I probably will be leading that, so it will, you know, not be as good as when Tuya does it, and you know, with the music and all, and but anyway, you know, I'll do my best, and that will be on Zoom. So I'll tell you what, if Michael, if you have that link for Zoom, if you would kindly put it in the chat box if anybody needs it, then we'll go straight from here, which is a GoToWebinar meeting, to the Zoom meeting. And then tomorrow morning, reappearance of the Christ at 6 a.m. GMT, and then identify as being at 6 p.m. GMT, another Zoom meeting. Reappearance of the Christ will be a broadcast as usual at our YouTube channel, and then we'll keep our daily work going at 8 o'clock GMT, and you know, observe this particular schedule, the ASK schedule, as we have been doing it. So let's see if I make All right. Now let's get into the text a little bit, and some of you have come along since I've welcomed everybody, and I just want to say hi and thank you. Thank you for being here. And then here Michael has put the U.S. election vigil into the chat box. If Tuya is able to do it tonight, then she will be the one. Otherwise, you'll have to just live with me doing it. Alrighty, now here we are. It's program number 87, and we're on, as far as I know, page 495. And drinking that a little bit, and then we'll go ahead. So, and I asked you a question last time. You know, sometimes I just say, well, when we have certain planets in a triangle or certain progressive movements in a triangle, what does it represent? And I asked you last time, what are the dynamics involved in moving from Libra through Scorpio and thence to Sagittarius? Now, some people might even have that as their rising sign sun and moon in different types of order. And then it would be unique for each individual. Maybe the most important triangle you've got is moving away from the rotary motion of your moon sign, which is the habitual myopic motion of the past, and what DK says is the prison of the soul, into what is called the potency of the sun of probability, which is your sun sign, because most people do respond to their sun sign, and whether they ever get into real soul orientation is a question. And then finally, their rising sign, which is the potency of the sun of possibility, not probability, but possibility. And so one of the important questions in life regarding this triangle, and it's important for people who are esoterically inclined, is, am I really responding to my higher spiritual possibilities? You know, forgetting the things which lie behind, I will strive towards my higher spiritual possibilities, says the powerful mantram, which commits us to preparing in one way or another for the reappearance of the Christ. And I assume that, you know, if we stay for any length of time working with the Tibetan, we realize how important that would be. So let's see here. There are, it says, great triangles of energy which affect the mental, the response apparatus of humanity. And to the above triangle, which concerns the unfoldment of the mind, two others can be added. So the triangle we have been studying, let me get this one more. There we go. Hopefully, yeah, that's good. Hopefully we understand a little bit now about that triangle, Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius. Gemini, the normal duality of mind, but it can represent the higher mind and the lower mind and the battle that goes on between them. And sometimes we call this the battle of the pairs of opposites. Then, if you remember, we have Libra representing super mind. It is, in a way, the atmic mind. The atmic plane is on the third level. You know, if you, let's see if I can, normally I would have all this ready, you know, but I almost almost had to turn it over to Michael and to Joe today, because I couldn't get into the, we've been having some peculiar storm problems, I'm not sure. So I almost couldn't quite make it. But let me bring up the, normally I would have this up and ready, but not at the moment. And it will be coming, however. Here is, let's see. Here are some AAB diagrams, and let's look here at the solar and planetary hierarchies. That'll be a good one that we oftentimes refer to. And here comes another one. And this is the one that some of these that Tuya has remade and recolored more accurately. And here we go. Okay. Yeah, that's it. So, you know, when we look at the normal Gemini mind, we're dealing right down here. Although Gemini is also the head of the cosmic Christ, one of my colleagues, Nicholas Newland, makes a good point about that, that the great constellation Orion has no head. And it is, by some, considered a cosmic Christ that Sirius follows after as the loyal dog. So Gemini is also a very high constellation, and represents cosmically, in a sense, the head of Orion. They're found in the same part of the sky. But anyway, this is the Gemini area. It's the mental plane. And then the atomic plane is the third one down. And so it is a plane of supermind. It's like the head of Brahma. Now, we remember Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, right? So Brahma is particularly the mental nature, the creative mental nature. And Vishnu, the love nature, Vishnu Surya, the sun, they are equivalent terms sometimes, and then Shiva. So Shiva, logoic plane, Vishnu, Surya, monadic plane, and Brahma, a mental plane. It's the plane of supermind. And when we really want the Aquarius meaning, we have to go all the way up here to the cosmic mental plane. And we might call it universal mind. Now, in this particular case, the universe is the solar system. It's a funny, I've been amused lately that the word universe has crept into the dialogue of the news feeds. People are always talking about the universe of this, the universe of that. Actually, it's probably a term from logic in a way, but more and more people are using it to mean the whole thing. A universe is like the whole thing. So the universal mind is like the mind of the solar logos, and it comes from cosmic levels. Okay, so those are the ones we have been studying. Now, he's going to add to them some other triangles. And let's take a look at what it looks like here that he's going to add. It looks like Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn. So Taurus, desire, the incentive to evolutionary unfoldment in the human kingdom, the heights of idealistic aspiration are reached in Taurus. That's what the Tibetan says. Now, we oftentimes think of it as a material and earthy sign, but remember, this is esoteric astrology, and Taurus is a sign of blinding light. It is the mother of illumination. It's in the feminine group, which consists of earth signs and water signs, and the masculine group of fire signs and air signs. So desire, the and even, you know, at first Taurus is filled with desire. Later it turns into something else, something much higher. It's the story of the black bull and the white bull, and it's the story of the journey on the back of the bull across the waters to the island of the one-eyed men in Hercules, and these are called the Cyclopses, or the Cyclops. And they are initiates, and they have the single eye. Taurus represents that. So at least in the beginning, if the Taurian person can lift their attention from the lower aspect of desire towards aspiration, then we will find, it doesn't say it here, but it says it elsewhere, that heights of idealistic aspiration are found in this sign. Then comes Scorpio, and it's interesting that it also connects with aspiration. And in a certain way, it takes on the word which is oftentimes assigned to Capricorn, you know, initiation and illumination. So if you look at the zodiacal rulers of the whole meditative process, then Scorpio is involved with illumination. But from another point of view, aspiration from the dense physical body of the planetary logos into his etheric body. We want to go there. That's where our spirituality for the time being really lies. So I've mentioned this before, but you know, it's good to memorize Leo concentration, Virgo meditation, Libra contemplation, Scorpio illumination, Sagittarius inspiration, and Capricorn initiation. And we could keep going with through Aquarius and through Pisces. Now, the key to the testing of the disciple is maybe one of the most human signs, and in a way, it's the ruler of the entire Buddhic plane. What you experience a different kind of light on each one of the planes. And if we actually kneel down and we lift the Hydra above our head, which means that we see all of our desires and our illusions and so forth from the perspective of the intuition, then the Hydra dies. So Scorpio has that idea that we rise by kneeling. Now, have you felt tested? Let's just say that when you go into a period when the moon is progressing through Scorpio, you will be tested. If perchance your rising sign, it can't happen for everybody, but the rising sign changes into Scorpio, it will be a period of testing that, depending on where you live, could last 30 years or more. So the moments when Pluto is very powerful, or when maybe the ruler of your sun sign or the ruler of your rising sign by progression moves into Scorpio, these will be times of testing. What is testing? You are confronted with something that is not easy, and you know you have to overcome it if you're going to make progress. There's all kinds of tests, and probably as many tests as there are people. You know, you could pause even for a moment and you could ask what kind of testing might be lying before me. You know, tests of courage, tests of independence rather than dependency, tests of cooperation, and, you know, of course, the tests of the Hydra, which sex, money, and comfort, or emotional tests, fear, hatred, and ambition, or mental tests, pride, separativeness, and cruelty. See, it's when we really begin to lift our aspirations higher and higher that the tests will come along. If we're just identified as the personality, we just consider it normal life. There's no test involved at all for us. We just go along with what the personality indicates. And that is, of course, if prolonged, it is a dangerous policy. Okay. So let's see. Ray 4. Interesting. These are two of the Ray 4 signs. And there's always a higher and lower part to Ray 4 and a kind of an oscillation between the harmony and the conflict side. The harmony part is considered to be the higher of the parts of Ray 4. And that's why we move from conflict into harmony. Now, just the fact that we are a human being is going to guarantee that we go through that process. And if I was to say to you, well, okay, can you name the conflict that you are going through now, whether or not you have a Ray for this or a Ray for that? You know, you are a member of the fourth creative hierarchy and you're a member of the fourth kingdom. Do you know what is the contest in your life right now between the angel of the presence and the dweller on the threshold? Two of these signs, well, I'm just going to pause there, just for us to reflect just a little bit. The Christ had this archetypal confrontation in the desert following the second initiation, and he went into the desert to fast and thus to become clear about his direction on a very high turn of the spiral, of course, when we consider how this reflects in our life. But usually, you know, you have a choice, and that's where the Ray 4 comes in. And that choice will either see you kind of, you know, status quo or going backwards, or really undertaking courageously and with steadfastness, a Ray 4 word, finally, undertaking with steadfastness the attitude which you must hold as you stand in spiritual being. So, you know, which will it be? Will you give in to this or that or the other, as we all have in our life? Or will you take a stand on something that is the higher of the pairs of opposites? Now, Taurus and Scorpio are very interesting because they are the two rulers of the what's called the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. I think I can, that means that our solar god, our solar system, has a place this great being that is far greater than a solar logos itself. So if I was to go to page 50 of Esoteric Astrology, basically what you see there is that there is a something. Whoop, I've just jumped the gun here, haven't I? And here it is. And this is it, Taurus and Scorpio. In this case, it's connected with Mars and the third creative hierarchy. But this is the great cosmic logos in which our solar system plays the part of a heart center. Very interesting. So Taurus and Scorpio, two signs of desire. Yes, connected with Mars, and two signs eventually of aspiration and illumination. This is the great being in whom our solar system is trying to find its place, with the solar logos playing the part of a strong heart center in this system. Now, obviously, these seven solar systems are a chakra in something, aren't they? You know, what's it going to be? Is it going to be the sacral center? Is it going to be the solar plexus center? I think there's reason to argue for either one. At the moment, I think of it largely as the solar plexus center, which could be the reason why so much of the sixth ray is found in connection with our particular solar system. But you see, Taurus and Scorpio are there, and they bring you into a sevenfold system of seven major stars. Notice there is a triangle, Taurus, Scorpio, Mars, right? It's a different triangle than the one we're looking at right now, Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn. So the successful entry or sustaining power of our solar logos inside this system is what is being achieved on a cosmic level, not just a solar systemic level. Now, that's the kind of thing that the masters are thinking about, and they're trying to understand that. For us, it's just, you know, it's nice to know, it's speculation, but it has to do with the nature of our solar system. And one day, when we are, let's say, a seventh degree initiate, we'll know a lot more about our solar system of love and wisdom than we know now. And when I say seventh degree initiate, I'm talking about such high beings as the Christ and the Buddha. Okay. Now, the third point in the triangle is Capricorn. And, you know, there's a way to, it's called the liberation of the initiate. I wonder how we understand that the best people and the worst people, as he describes it, are found with Capricorn prominent. So, you know, he says you can be hard and unyielding and cruel. You know, if you're dealing with somebody who is not yet turned around, not yet repented, who has not yet reversed the wheel, and you come up with Scorpio and Capricorn, you know, you have a pretty hard-bitten combination. It can be very dangerous, and some of the real villains in human history have had this combination, just sadistic and cruel. On the other hand, these are two signs which really get you into the spiritual hierarchy if you pass the necessary tests. Think of it. I mean, these are hard tests. In Scorpio, excuse me, you're wrestling with the Hydra. And in Capricorn, you're going down into the depths of Hades or hell to meet the ruler there, Pluto, you know. And right now, we do have in the sky Pluto in Capricorn. So, you know, we have to, in this Capricorn labor of Hercules, we have to free our solar angel. We have to liberate Prometheus, who is the solar angel. We have a lot of work to do. We have to fight the three-headed dog, symbolically, which is Kerberos, and it represents the dweller, you know, the mind, the emotions, and body out of control. Or at least, let's just say, in control, so that people are living according to that three-headed dog rather than, rather than something higher. I'm recalling some dramas that we used to do, and my friends Dwayne Carpenter, and Keith Bailey, both of them deep esotericists, and myself, we played the three-headed dog, and my daughter was Hercules, and she slew the three-headed dog, and there we were lying on the floor underneath some kind of blanket or something to show that we had been slain. It was a little difficult to breathe, but not difficult to laugh. Anyway, my experience with Cerberus. Okay, so the liberation of the initiate. Light and liberation, they are closely allied, and we seem to have then three signs of keen aspiration: Taurus, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. And we find Mercury, that's coming up. We find Mercury strong in all these signs. Now, in this particular case, Capricorn has a very strong aspiration because it rules the law of group progress. You want to climb higher and higher on that road that winds upward all the way. I'm trying to figure out why I put Sagittarius there, but anyway, it should be Taurus, Scorpio, and looks like Sagittarius. So there are some connections that are important. So what have we got? A lot of desire at first, and then we lift that desire out of the negative Taurus towards aspiration toward the Buddhic plane, which will put us into the light of day. And that light of day is the light of Scorpio, where we actually do see. We begin to see. Now, remember, that's interesting. I think this is meant to be Capricorn. It was a long time ago that I wrote this, but if I find it's not so, I'll correct it. But I do think it is Capricorn. And it's very interesting. Taurus and Mercury both are connected with Bud or wisdom or buddhi. The name for Mercury is Bud or Buddha. So we have the idea that the Buddha came from Mercury, just the way Master DK did. This is my speculation, of course, and that the Christ and Master Kutumi came from Venus, because always you find yourself originating on a sacred planet. If you are finding yourself eventually on a non-sacred planet, you originated on a sacred planet. So my speculation is that the Buddha, so close to this third ray monad, which finally Mercury has originated on Mercury, and well, you can tell from Master DK's teaching, he is the messenger of the masters, and maybe the most Mercurian in a sense, or one of the most Mercurian of the masters. I would say also Master Rákóczi, the Hungarian, the Count, the Maha Chohan, has as well a kind of Mercurian origin. He certainly, is intellect supreme. So Mercury is connected with Taurus. Scorpio is hierarchically ruled by Taurus. And there is this also this connection of Capricorn, Mercury, and the Pleiades. And we have to remember that we have an 18-fold chart, three columns, and when you look at the chart that connects with humanity, you have the Pleiades, Capricorn, Mercury, see? And then down into whatever makes us human and involves the throat center. So I think I made a mistake there when I put Sagittarius. Maybe later I'll figure out that I didn't make a mistake, but it looks like I did. Okay, so that's the triangle. And, you know, it depends on, do you have that in your horoscope? And if you do, how is it arranged? For instance, it's completely different. If suppose you have a Taurus rising sign, a Scorpio sun sign, and a Capricorn moon. Well, you're moving from rigidity into transformational darkness and struggle, and then thence into the illumination of Taurus. But suppose, let me reverse that a little bit. Suppose you keep your Capricorn moon, instead you have a Taurus sun, and you have a Scorpio rising sign. So you've moved out of the habit-bound myopic rigidity into the lushness of fulfilled desire in your Scorpio sun sign, and you are indulging your desires. But finally, you struggle with those desires and have a kind of victory over them by having Scorpio as your rising sign. And we could, you know, we could play with them in different ways. It would all depend how this particular triangle shows up in your horoscope, if it does, or how you interpret it on behalf of humanity. Now, for humanity, we pretty well are given the order here, but we are given the order. On the other hand, you know, for humanity too, we might say Scorpio, Taurus, Capricorn, and forget the sun, moon, rising sign at the moment, and let's just say that in Scorpio, you are struggling with all kinds of negativity. But in, that's with under Scorpio, but in comes the light of knowledge with Taurus, and more light. And then you have the incentive to move towards that light. And the more the light shows, the more you feel the possibility of a still greater light until you aim to achieve the light supernal of Capricorn, which is initiation. Lost am I in light supernal, yet on that light I turn my back. Okay, so, you know, because I am pressed for time today, because of the U.S. Vigil, and because my computer these days seems to be, I don't know what it is, but there's just, I can't seem to get where I want to go, you know, so I don't want to have a vigil that I'm supposed to give and then discover that I can't give it. Okay, so I'm going to put this here, and I'm going to say this is the end of Science of Triangles number 87, and we're on page 495, I assume. Are we still there, 495? I think so. If not, just let me know, Michael. And this is evening. Okay. And, oh yeah, I had a lot of fun with that last one where it just didn't record, you know. What can I say? And next time we'll start up with page 88 and we'll be dealing with interesting Sagittarius, Cancer, and Leo. And I think this may have to do with a kind of a lower triangle. And we'll see what he says about it. Anyway, I have something to say about it, and we'll deal with it the next time. And so that will be on the 25th, as far as I can see, of November, and it'll be a morning program. Okay.
We are still
Now,
on page 495.
495. Thank you, Michael. Okay. Now, because time is limited, unfortunately, we'll have to stop it there. So now it will be your turn. We've really only covered one triangle, but there are many combinations and permutations that you can discover in relation to these triangles. Like I've been saying, these are triangles in rotation, and they function according to the law of mutation. And always one of the points will represent the dominating point, another an intermediary point, and another a lower point. So it's kind of life quality and appearance, or it's spirit, consciousness and form. It depends on where you stand on the ladder of evolution, how these triangles can be used by you. And that goes for sun, moon, and rising sign. Yeah, you can have exactly the same sun, moon, and rising sign as someone else. But if they are, let's say, you are an initiate of the third degree, and they are not even interested in the spiritual path, then the sun, moon, and rising sign will be interpreted much differently. And that's where you go for a little help. You go to page 332 and 333 of Esoteric Astrology. You get a little help here. And you'll recognize this page, because basically it deals with the undeveloped man, what's it called here? Undeveloped man, the advanced man or advancing man, and the disciple initiate. And some of that disciple can be brought over into the advanced man category and initiate into the final column. But you've got to admit that, when you're a Scorpio or have strong Scorpio, and we're in that sign right now, aren't we? Unity of selfishness, or the monster over here, is a lot different from the fighter with negativity, and it's a lot different from having achieved the higher unity from the perspective of the Buddhic plane. See, every one of these is a triangle too. It's a triangle within a particular sign, and that triangle is based upon the stage of evolution, or the stages of evolution at which one can find oneself. So, in the matter of esoteric astrology and also the science of triangles, we have to assess where a person, somewhat accurately, where a person stands upon the wheel of life. Have they reversed the wheel? Are they in the struggle of reversing the wheel? Or are they not caring at all, and the wheel is just turning in rotary motion, and they're living strictly as the non-aspiring personality? Okay. So let's see. Your thoughts, your questions, whatever. And because we will have to stop within a half hour. And if you don't have any other questions, we'll stop sooner. But questions, thoughts, things you'd like to say, things you'd like to bring up. What do we have? Anything?
I am looking for hands. I'm looking for questions or comments in the chat box. Nothing yet.
Oh, okay. Okay. Maybe I can think of one for you. Suppose I give you, has anybody come up? Not yet, I think.
Not yet.
Suppose I give you a planetary sequence, and I will say that you are going to have a triangular movement, which seems a little bit contradictory, from Venus to Mars to Mercury. From Venus to Mars to Mercury. How could that be interpreted if, in this case, Venus represents the condition of the form, Mars represents the condition of consciousness, and Mercury represents the point of attainment, which is possible? Well, it's not necessarily an easy question because I've reversed the planets a little bit. And what I'll do here is actually, I'm going to try to get this correct. So how would you interpret the movement from Venus as the form, Mars as consciousness, and Mercury as the destined point, attainment. Do we have an idea? See, usually I give you signs or, you know, constellations to consider. What I'm going to try to demonstrate is triangles in rotation. So just to get us started, if a person who is form-centered is using Venus, then the soft life, the pleasant life, the life where a beauty of form, surrounding oneself with pleasantness, is the chief thing. One will want to have a personality-enhancing environment in which things are peaceful, beautiful, agreeable, and not necessarily representing the higher part of Venus. I think the personality ray of Venus is ray 2. This is my speculation. Now, we're used to thinking of it as ray 5, that is the soul quality, but obviously, depending on the nature of your form, you're going to use any influence according to the nature of the form. But now, suppose you begin to outgrow that, and you say, I'm, as people do, I'm just tired of heaven every day, you know, or, you know, or as they say when they go to one of the islands, oh, just another day in paradise, you know, as if it's it wears a bit thin to have no challenges because everything is so agreeable. Then you enter into a battle to bring out a higher aspect of consciousness. And remember that Mars does rule the advanced man in Scorpio, and that Mars hierarchically rules Sagittarius, that sign of striving to lift out of the usual rotary motion. Okay. And that's going to take you into a struggle between the pairs of opposites. What should be the goal of this struggle? The goal is illumination of some kind. Either the ability to think with real clarity and have the mind held steady in the light, or enter the higher mind, all of which can be ruled by Mercury, the sun of mind, and finally into the abstract mind and the transcendental mind, all ruled by Mercury. So, you know, Venus in this particular case would hold you back if that was the stage at which you were focused, because you'd just be focused on the form and the way Venus affects the form-led life. Then comes the disturbance, and then comes the opening up into higher stages of mind. Now, what if I reverse this? So, and I'm gonna just do it this way. How would you interpret the movement from Mars to Mercury to Venus? Now, you know, Mars is representing form. Mercury is representing the transitional phase. Okay, so I'll do it this way. Mars, form, and Mercury, transitional, some odd word, and Venus, in this case, is, no, that's not what I want. Point of attainment. What would this mean to you? Does anybody have an idea? See, in a way, it depends. If you are a form-based person, then Mars is on top of the triangle. If you're a struggling person in the middle, then Mercury is on the top of the triangle. And finally, if you've attained, Venus is on top of the triangle. See, triangles in rotation, according to the law of mutation. Any ideas about this? Or
I am seeing no hands raised, nor questions, comments in the chat box.
Okay, so, you know, I told you how I used to go out in the woods in Santa Fe with my tape recorder in those days, you know. And I went through all these triangles. My daughter Heidi, she transcribed from the tape all these things. And I hope I still have them somewhere. But now it's a bit off the top of my head. But look, in the realm of form, there is constant conflict, friction, aggression, combat. This is really fire by friction, where you're, in order to find out the nature of any other form, you're literally bumping into it abrasively. And there is no peace, and all is restless and filled with impacts from others and yourself. This is the life of bewildered idealism and combat and the attempt always to overcome the enemy. Okay. But after a while, you begin to realize that this life of rampant desire, which leads you into aggressive interaction with others and them with you, because you're always going to, you're going to find people like yourself who are giving it back as you have given it, you begin to think about it. And although Mars, in a way, represents the concrete mind, Mercury represents a higher aspect of the concrete mind. This is the thinking, logical mind, which rules. Okay, let's see if I can fill this in. Thinking, logical mind, which rules the concrete mind, the lower four subplanes, and you become a thinker. And instead of being driven entirely by your desires, your passions, we see so many people today, you know, that are bewildered by the demagogue in power. They are just leading with their emotions, and the thoughts are completely guided by the arousing of their passions. It's a Mars stage. It's a red stage. It's a stage under which many of the red states seem to fall. It's not blue, that's for sure. So basically, we have Mars form and friction combat to Mercury, which is transitional thinking, logical mind, lower concrete mind. And we've met a lot of people. They are not necessarily what you call spiritual, but they are smart, and they know how to control their life from the level of the mind. Okay. Then they move on. I don't know how many lives it might take. It's different for everybody. Venus, or let's call it higher mind, and soul mind, which infuses the concrete mind. And centering within the causal body. That's your point of attainment. So what you've done here in this triangle is you've moved from your solar plexus through your throat center, which has so much to do with the normal use of concrete logical mind, into the Ajna center, ruled by Venus, and which has to do with the ability to access the higher mind. If you turn to page 517 of this book, Esoteric Astrology, you will notice that Venus does rule the Ajna center. And it has a lot to do with the heart as well. So from your passions into dispassion and mentality, and finally into that harmonious state of soul mind, where you are immersed in a higher form of light on the higher mental plane. Okay, you, Michael, see how that works. Yeah.
Ishtar has responded to this particular triangle.
Okay, good.
Mars or form equals trials. Mercury mind.
Yeah.
Mercury
what
mind.
What was the last word? What was the last word? Mars equals
trials. Mars or form equals trials.
Trials.
The Mercury mind analyzes, and the transitional Venus point of attainment is a way to balance for equanimity.
Yeah, it's definitely a higher perspective, and I think, you know, there is merit in how you describe that. It's not just only one thing. Yeah, Mars are, you know, the every once in a while the Tibetan uses the word trouble. And when he uses it, he usually means some kind of disturbance which has to be changed into something better. And obviously, trials, troubles, you know, difficulties, frictions, all those things, yes, Mars. Then you're right. You analyze it. The logic comes into the situation. And you stand back a little bit. And you see with greater clarity because the smoke is clearing of all the trials and troubles. And, you know, you're no longer on the battlefield. As a matter of fact, in a certain way, in the old days of battle, the generals, they stood above the battlefield, mounted, you know, to see how the battles were unfolding. They earned that right from being in other incarnations right down there in the thick of the fray. But they could analyze which way things were going from their higher point of view. But still, it's not the highest point of view. Venus represents soul mind. And so we bring the ray of Venus down into the area of the logical mind, Mercury. Now, that's one of the things Mercury represents, the logical, analytical mind. It's not the only thing that that is represented by Mercury. But this way you've described it, yes, I think you definitely could have that, definitely. I might try one more.
Well, we could talk about trials, troubles, tribulations, and so forth, but really, they're only opportunities.
Yes, yes. Well, of course, you know, in a way, the whole process is under Saturn, the god of opportunity, the great third ray lord, you know, and that calls upon your inherent mental abilities to solve all of these issues that are unfolding. But, you know, it takes a long time, says Master M. He's almost exasperated. He's almost exasperated when he says, when will you realize? Does he say at last? Maybe he says at last that obstacles are possibilities. So, you know, yes, Saturn is the god of opportunity, and all of these threefold processes are opportunities. Now, another way I could put it, well, you know, I could, you know, turn these things around and around, but one of the, in a way, the most obvious of the triangular relationships is it goes like this: Mars, Venus, Mercury. And this is a real triangle. It is a triangle that is very effective on Earth. And this is a natural sequence of this triangle and involves three planes of activity. So what would we say about this without me going into it just yet? I can make short work of it, but I'm our time is running out. I'm just interested if you see a sequence here. What do you see?
Okay. No hands or responses in the chat box, but there's an obvious Ray 6, Ray 5, Ray 4.
Yes, and that is true. That is true what you say. 6, 5, 4. And of course, when you do that, 6, 5, 4, this is what you get. You move from Kama. I'm not yet talking about Kama Manus because there is kind of an intertransitional stage when you're moving from Kama to Manus. There's a lot more Kama in it, but it's Kama Manus. You're moving from plane number 6 to plane number 5. Where, you know, the fifth ray of Venus is dominating. And this is, you're moving to what is one of the highest meanings of Mercury for humanity. You're moving into Buddhi. So from this point of view, if we take a really advanced person, you know, let's just say, we take a person who is naturally intuitive, thus with Mercury at the apex, who can think logically, thus Manus, and even higher Manus is transitional, and then who is supported by the virtues of Mars or not. You know, it can be, we let's just say we can have a conversion here. The person moves from this ardent desirous state into aspiration and finally seeks the soul that is found in Venus. Mars does, by the way, rule the entire personality and the concrete lower mind, interestingly. But anyway, there's a line from Mars to Venus on the higher mental plane. But we're interested in Buddhi Manus at our stage of evolution. We're interested in combining the intuition with thought power. And so we want to combine the powers of the Buddhic plane with the powers of the monastic plane. We want to combine the transcendental mind of Mercury with the higher mind of Venus. And that is your goal. And this tells us something about where maybe a number of us are focusing at this time, and the Tibetan is encouraging us thus to focus, because he gives us more than Manus can ever compute. So he's given, you know, richly endowed us with what Manus can know. But then he takes us further and says, what happens when you apply pure reason to all of this, i.e. the abstract mind? What happens when you apply even a higher aspect of pure reason, the transcendental mind of Buddhi? That's our frontier. We can call it Manus Buddhi or Buddhi Manus. That's our frontier. We're not satisfied only with soul mind. It's very good. and we have to cultivate it. And in the case of most of us, it's not yet cultivated, but we don't stop there. We go into higher Mercury, the light of day, transcendental mind, as it is called, a higher aspect of Mercury. And that, I would say, is kind of the archetypal movement, as Michael said, from 6 to 5 to 4, from Kama 6, Manas 5, and Buddhi 4. So you see, what's important is you see how you can play with these figures, with these aspects, with these principles, with these rays, with these planets. You see how you can do that, okay? And because you can do that, a lot more light can come in as you try to understand relationships between these factors. Now, mostly when we do our identify as being work, it's not about relationship, it's about non-relationship, you know, it's about oneness, okay? But here, it's all about relationship determined with meticulous entirety, which is something that DK is a fantastic expert in delivering. So yeah. This gives you an idea of how we can use the science of triangles to help define the different stages of evolution at which a person may find himself or herself, and the different steps that come next and next. And basically, what's our next step? That's the big thing. Every one of us, in addition to knowing the constitution of man, which we somewhat know, has that next step. And oftentimes it's taken with regard to a particular triangle. You know,
and
even
Michael,
here. Yes.
Isabel has a suggestion posed as a question, perhaps, with Mars representing Hercules, Venus the Christ, and Mercury as the Buddha.
Well, that's a good one. That actually, you know, that does take us into those things that are called cosmic decanates. And they are Scorpio, Pisces, and Taurus. It depends on how we want to look at them, you know. But the Buddha, Mercury, is the Taurus decanate. And, you know, whether we put the Buddha as transitional or, see, let's just say the first ray, Hercules, is oftentimes the starting point. We battle for soul consciousness, and there we have the Scorpio part and the Mars part. Then we move into the light, we might say via the third ray, Buddha, who is in this case Mercury, and as you say, finally, or at least I'm saying finally, the great Christ, who is offering the next stage of unfoldment of the divine aspects, offering love, which comes after the wisdom and the mind. So that love is being offered, and then Pisces is the final decanate. Of course, you can play with those decanates. And as far as which one is higher, in your own case, it can be related to your soul ray. See, in other words, what is your ray equipment can tell you what you have to achieve. So, yes, okay. Agreed on that point. Interesting. Yeah, Mercury is Buddha, absolutely. The Bud is wisdom, and Buddha is wisdom. Lord of wisdom, Lord of light. That's that confluence there of the word B-U-D H or BUDDHA. And Jan has something here too, right? We're going to have to quit right away.
Yes, Jan questions, I wonder how the quality of humanity achieving the state of right human relations can be accomplished without understanding this dynamic as it expresses itself in one's life. Conflict cannot be resolved without this awareness.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it cannot rightfully be resolved. I mean, obviously you can agree to, hey, let's not fight, you know, peace at any price, and I'm tired of fighting and all that kind of thing. It's not the real resolution. And of course, look, I'm not saying, Jan, that a person has to know esotericism per se in order to achieve right human relations. I mean, let's just say a very strong achievement of the mind as it is in Christ, or let's just say Christ's love, a real strong heart center development can achieve a lot without all this cognitive knowledge that we are working with, because the Tibetan is who he is. He teaches what he teaches, and he is who he is. So we have a particular mode of entry, but there are other modes of entry. You know, on page 518 of Discipleship 2, three different types of second-race souls are listed, and the Tibetan's approach is only one. There's the Christ's approach of pure love and the Buddha's approach of pure wisdom, and right human relations can come out of any of those approaches, and he seems to imply that there are still other approaches as well, maybe correlating with the other rays. So we don't have to teach everybody occultism, but for those who are, and I mean by that, of course, spiritual occultism, it may be that we find people who are susceptible to this type of teaching, and for whom it is a line of least resistance. In other words, it may be their line. On the other hand, you can have many very worthy people who will find their way into right human relations, and this method that we're using is not their way at all. But I will say that all along the way, there will be gradually an increasing awareness, for sure. An increasing consciousness, as you suggest.
And then,
you know, Ishtar, and that may be have to be the last one we do.
Yeah. Ishtar writes, trials are not necessarily fighting. It's trying to find a new way to understand, create different approaches to handling difficult situations or circumstances where nothing is obvious, such as how do you help drug addicts in your life? How do you support the vulnerable without infringement? Much complexity to solving right human relations.
Yeah, that it's all very true. And look, when we say fighting, we don't necessarily mean martial arts, except for the principle of martial arts. When there's a trial, there are always two points of view that are contesting with each other, and a judgment will probably be made in accordance with one or the other of them. Maybe if there's a third point in the triangles for the more advanced thinker, some kind of reconciliation between the two can come about. But the usual test, trial, and triumph, which is associated with Scorpio, does demand that this contest between basically what turns out to be representative of a higher of the pairs of opposites and representative of a lower pair of opposites, one of them is going to have to prevail, and you are the judge between them. He kind of explains how you can take up your position in Libra, and according to your decision, you will either go backward into the materialism of Virgo, let matter reign, or forward into the drastic testing of Scorpio. But you know that the trial is the time when you are evaluating which way you would go. So evaluation and trial are also factors that go together. But of course, as you are suggesting, it's a subtle thing, and it's not necessarily hand-to-hand, you know, combat. It can work itself out on the physical plane that way, as when you have, like, you know, who's going to be the champion of this prize fight or this martial arts thing or whatever. It can work out that physically. But for most people, there's a lot more subtlety in it as you evaluate. Now, how do you help people? Well, look, Master Moria basically says, speak to the level of consciousness of your interlocutor. Speak to the level of consciousness of the person with whom you are discussing. And an old friend of mine, he was a Scorpio. He taught psychology. He'd be quite an old man now. And he said, don't aim too high, or people will completely miss your point and it will do them no good. But don't aim too low either, because what you must present is something just a little higher than where they are, and they'll be able to make the bridge to that because it's still within the range of comprehension. Now, to infringe means do this, that's it, okay? But we don't do that generally when we're on the right-hand path. Okay, there's a lot in your questions, but I cannot go any farther. And basically, Ishtar is saying, yes, okay, I'll just quickly deal with it. It has cycles: engage, disengage, reflect, rest, re-engage. Yes, the material world is sometimes the testing ground or resting ground, okay? But all is but a tool with detachment. Right, okay, it's good, it's good. And and always to adapt kind of intuitively to the situation in a way that cannot be exactly spelled out. If you follow these steps, everything will work. No, you have to be spontaneously with it to know when to go forward, to pull back, to engage, to disengage, to re-engage, to just let silence take care of things. Thank you. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. And now, because there is another webinar coming up on Zoom, and you do have that in the chat, the way things have been going for me, I've got to even see if I can get there. So that's what I'll do now. And either Tuya or me or both of us will be there to continue our vigil, so that the good, the true, and the beautiful do prevail in this decisive election for the promotion of basically democracy all over the world, not just one country. So let's just sound a final om together. And thank you all. And thank you, Michael and Joe, and to you over on the right, and we'll go to the to the next presentation, which starts at 8 o'clock PM GMT. And we'll see you soon. Okay. We'll see you soon. Those of you who, you know, can or make it or wish to make it. Right. Bye for now. And we'll get this converted and it will be on Makara for you. Okay. Bye-bye.